Hey, welcome back to Podcast 202, Mingle Mate Mary. So glad that this one is, and his last one, way better than our first couple, because we totally, well, me, messed up trying to learn as we go, so.
We're figuring it out, and Garth is carrying the heavy load of the technology, so thanks to him.
Which is scary, because I am not a big, heavy, carry the technology kind of guy, but real quick, we've already had people reach out to us through our minglematemary@gmail.com email asking relationship questions, yeah. Marriage questions. Happy to answer those, but again, through this whole thing, our desire is to, within the next few weeks, start a Patreon page where we can deal with people one-on-one with a little more anonymity. So,
right.
Like joking, if someone sends you an email and it's BigJim@2020@hotmail.com. We don't know who you are, so you can ask any question you want.
Sure, and I've pretty much heard it all, just about.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I have, and then I haven't, but...
Right.
With that, we also want you to know that our MingleMateMary.com website should be up. We've got some great swag on there, but we've also got some great resources for your relationships and marriage, and we'll continue to add to that. So... make sure you check that out. We love the support. Your support allows us to do what we do. And again, working with the professional, my sister Sheree, happy to do that. So real quick, talking about, you know, we were just talking off air about our parents and how they, like, when they fought, we kind of knew, but they weren't loud. They didn't throw things.
No.
You were saying that mom, you know, practiced the silent treatment real well. I think dad probably did at some point, too, just by default. You know, there's no one to talk to.
Sure.
But I was saying there's a story of a woman who came into my office. She said, for the longest time, I felt like my parents never fought.
Right.
But she said, in hindsight, when I found out something, she said, in hindsight, I realized many times they would go for a drive. The wife would say, we need to go do something, honey.
Yeah.
They'd get in the car. They'd be gone for a half hour, you know, an hour, whatever, and come back. And she found out once then one of her girlfriends was driving and pulled up next to her parents.
Okay.
And saw them just going at it.
Arguing or excuse me, making out?
No. Good point. Good point. Arguing. And so she said, then my girlfriend told me, and she said, I put it back into... that Saturday and in that window and realize they drive off when they fight and until they figure it out and then they come back. Because okay. She said so many times, I then realized they said we have to go do something. They never came back with packages or groceries or like, hey, we went to the post office. And she said that's when I realized, oh, they don't want to fight in front of us, so they get in the car.
Yep.
But if you, for a future podcast, if you have stories about how your parents fought, we would love to hear them.
Sure.
And probably some people didn't see their parents fight in the most healthy way.
No, right. Or fight at all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one. That's probably the most unhealthy way. Because then you think, when you get into a relationship, my parents never had a problem.
Right. And it's a false sense of what's really going on.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let us jump into today. We're going to do a tip of the hat to... women, how to show your wife honor. This is an excerpt from List to Live By, which is it's the fourth book out in that collection by Alice Gray and Steve Stevens and John Van Diest. And I don't know any of them, but...
sounds like a good book, though.
It does. It does. These are 10 ways to show your wife honor. And I would challenge you because, and I've read through these... they're also a great way to honor your husband as well. But
go through
these. I don't think they're in any particular order. Number one, praise her publicly.
Oh, that's a great one.
So I probably, depending on your wife's personality, on what you would praise her for.
Right.
Or how you would praise her.
Like what would be meaningful.
Some women might not want to be praised in public about how they look.
Right.
But there's other ways, in hard work or cooking or as a mother, things like that.
I love it when my husband praises me for something that shows my intelligence or my hard work. that he notices and he respects, and when he mentions that publicly to somebody else, that means a lot.
Cool. Number two is to say thank you often. That doesn't strike me as a huge one, but okay.
It's good, though, because if your spouse, if your wife is especially doing some of the traditional things around the house or around the children, boy, a simple thank you from your husband means a lot.
Yep. Open doors for her.
I love it.
I do that. Wait on her joyfully.
Ooh, wait on her joyfully.
I probably need some help with that.
That means you have to kind of, when you do something for her, you kind of skip, have a little skip in your step.
And a smile. And I like
to. And maybe you're humming.
Yes, I like to clap my hands.
Yes.
Like that, say, how can I help you?
Yes.
Yeah, not really, but I probably should. Wait on her patiently.
Yes.
Good way to show her honor. Seek her opinion.
Oh, that's a big one. I would love that.
Yeah. I would love. We sound like we could dig into that. We won't. I'm bad at that myself. Kim is a... She is a critical thinker. I don't mean negative. She just...
Right.
I'm like, I made the decision. And she's like, what do you mean you made the...
Right.
I didn't even know there was a decision to be made.
Yeah, she can think of the processes. She's a more systematic thinker. And you go right to the end point.
Yeah. Which, on a side note, I've learned the hard way, because I've had people yell at me. I'll appoint someone or put someone in a place to work or help or do something before they've proven their character, before I know anything about them.
Yeah.
And she's always got that spidey sense.
Yes.
Well, she'll say, no, don't trust that person.
Yeah. I think maybe Mitch doesn't necessarily ask for my opinion too often because now 40 years later, he knows I'm going to give my opinion regardless.
True. That's a Heckman thing.
Yeah.
Next is take her advice. See, if you don't let her share her opinion, you don't have to take her advice.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
But yeah, that's probably again something I need to work on. I do need to work on. I don't make it sound like I might. I do need to work on that. Respect her feelings. So I think I know what that means. As a female, what does that mean?
If Mitch is affirming my emotions or my feelings, validating my feelings, even by saying things like, wow, I can see how you feel that way, or I'm hearing that you're feeling that way, or it seems like you're feeling, that shows me he's noticing, and that's a sign of respect for me.
Mm. Something I learned a long time ago, I read it somewhere, is when to help your spouse understand how you feel, you listen, you repeat what they say, and then you also share a time when you felt the same way.
Oh, that's a great tip.
And so, you know, you say, okay, is this what you said? Yes. And is this how you felt? Yes. And then you follow up with, you know, that's strange because I remember feeling that way once when my dog ran away or my best friend gossiped behind my back or whatever. And it kind of seals the deal, like, yes, they heard me.
They got it. Yeah.
They feel it. They know. So.
Yeah, unless you're just trying to make it all about you.
Yeah, and we hate that. I mean, to be blunt, this last year we went on a fishing trip, me and four of my best friends growing up. You know all of them. And one of them said in the boat, you know, sometimes you just need to shut up and not have the conversation all about you. And I was like,
ooh,
absolutely right.
Good advice.
Donnie, you're absolutely right. And it's good to hear that. The last two, bring her a gift.
Yeah.
Okay. Many times the gift is more about presentation than the gift itself.
Sure. It's just truly the thought that counts.
Yep. And last is listen.
Right.
So I think those are great ways to show your wife honor. And I would caution any man who's listening not to use these in a way to manipulate, but to truly use them as a way to build a bridge. You know?
Right, and use them with authenticity rather than a formula. Like, I got to do these things. That she's going to smell that sense of if you have an agenda.
Yeah, good way to put it. Hey, so has anybody ever, any of your friends been brutally honest with you about something?
Yes, I'm sure. More times than not, my sister has been brutally honest with me about stuff. She is probably the top person, even above my spouse, that has really been brutally honest, and it's been really good. And I miss that. You and I lost our sister this last year, and I miss her speaking into my life.
Yeah. She, speaking of smelling stuff, she could smell when, for me personally, when I would buffet why I'm doing something or why I'm acting a certain way or why I would excuse someone's behavior. I'd buffet it with this. This is okay, and this is what I'm, and she would just rip that off and say, no.
Yeah.
This is why you're doing that. This is what's going on. And yes. And you, I mean, no one loved you more than her. So you could take it. You could handle it. But
that's right.
Incredibly brutal. Did I tell you what Addie, my granddaughter, said a couple weeks ago in the kitchen?
No. What did your granddaughter say?
I get up early to read and pray. She gets up early to watch me read and pray. And we start talking about heaven. And she goes, Papa, do you know what the best thing about heaven is? And I said, yes, you get to live forever. Because I'm thinking that's where a five-year-old's mind is at.
Sure.
And she kind of stops and she literally tilts her head. She goes, no. I go, oh, I'm thinking she heard something in Sunday school. So I said, oh, okay, well then what's the best thing about going to heaven? And she goes, you get to see Auntie Renee.
Oh.
Oh, I lost it. I mean, I lost it. I was like, you're right. I said, that is the best thing about going to heaven.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Precious.
Oh. All right. Hey, let's jump into this. How do I get him to see it's his problem? So there was an article that was out on, it was actually a blog by Leslie Vernick. And she tackles this question.
Which she's got great resources, by the way.
Yeah, she's amazing. If you want to check out her website. But one of the things that one of her readers was talking to her about was and the reader was, I know this is everybody, but from what you can tell, the reader was like, it really is my husband's problem.
Yeah.
It really, I know that people a lot of times come in and say that, and you sit there and go, But the question still remains, how do I get him to see it's his problem?
Yeah.
And so she gave different insights. I'd love to hear your take on it. I have a few things. One of the main things that Leslie talked about was that, and we kind of talked about this in the last podcast, is even if it's his problem, you have to guard your heart from becoming a part of the problem.
Right.
So in, again, somewhere along the line, I picked up the concept of, I don't want to survive. Regardless of what it is, there are times when you have to survive. You're lost out in the wilderness or you're lost in a relationship. But if by chance you don't learn to grow beyond that survival, you pick up tendencies then which negatively impact that situation that you're in.
Right. So like moving beyond just survival and you want to be able to thrive in your life.
Right. So true story about actually, I was at this conference with Renee about 20 years ago. A therapist was talking about, shared a story about a guy who had to survive outside, had a plane crash, was outdoors for a month and a half till they found him up in Alaska, went back home after he was rescued, and for a long time couldn't urinate unless he went outside.
Wow.
Because he was so
conditioned.
Yeah, just outside, I relax. He's in the house or in the bathroom, and things are state of the art. And he's just like, I'm not used to this. I have to be standing up. I have to be out where there's trees and woods and things like that. But we can kind of pick up those survival techniques in a negative way in our relationships.
Yeah.
How would we get people to see that it is their problem without, you know, that's a hard bridge to cross with your spouse. Hey, it's you, not me.
Right. I think, again, all the disclaimers about each situation, each individual is different, but my general thoughts on this is, number one, you have to allow that person, whether it's your spouse or your children at a certain point, they have to learn by experiencing the consequences and we have to pull back, not because we want to be mean or reject them, but we have to let them suffer the consequences of their problem and not fix it or not become codependent and make it okay. And then secondly, I think we have to spend some time focusing on ourselves and our health and us being okay and us being in a good, healthy place mentally, emotionally, spiritually, because it does not typically work real well to try to convince them or cajole them or harass them to get them to see it's their problem. That doesn't typically work.
Right. Well, at what point does someone, especially if it's a female, do they just say, okay, this person's never going to change, and even if I try to wait it out and make them pay for their consequences, they're just never going to change? Is there a point where, and I don't mean divorce, but is there a point where they just completely live their own life?
Sometimes, because... again, I'll throw out terms, and this is actually from some of the Leslie Vernick materials. There's destructive behavior, and then there's disappointing behavior.
Ooh, that's good. That's
and
good.
And so my husband, it might be his problem. It might be an issue that truly, honestly, could be said it's his problem. If it's only disappointing behavior, then with God's help, I learned to cope with that, and I learned to make me the best me I can be, and work within the context of who he is and his problem. If it's destructive behavior, then I recommend go on to Lisa Turquist's book on boundaries and goodbye, because then we need some boundaries, and sometimes if it's that destructive, we have to have a break or a separation, or and sometimes, worst case scenario, we actually have to end the marriage.
Right. One of the things I like that Leslie covers in this is she says so many times we waste time focusing on his problem.
Yeah.
And she said a question you should ask, which this is so good, is what's my problem with his problem?
Yes. Oh, that's such a good question.
And I know, and I'm probably the only one out there, that I can make my wife's problem the sole reason why my life is messed up.
Yeah. Yeah, because it kind of becomes an excuse for us not doing the right thing.
Right. So I have to stop and say, okay, what's my problem? And you know what the funny thing is I don't have a problem with it. I mean, literally when I go, there's really not an issue here.
What do you mean?
Well, so I go, you know what? You used to hug and kiss me every time I came in the house. And now you don't anymore. I'm just making this up.
Yeah, okay.
The reason it's a problem to me, A, it's not a problem. But the reason it's a problem to me is because I'm selfish and I want to get recognition and I want to be hugged and kissed when I walk in the door.
Okay.
And it's really not a problem. I'm just choosing to make it a problem.
Okay.
And so I wish I could think of an immediate example, and if my wife was here, she could think of 100, but where I've made it a problem, and it's not, because I go, you know, when I ask what's my problem with it, I have to sit down and be honest, go, it's really not an issue. I'm just choosing to make it an issue.
Right. That's a good perspective, because there's often, again, and this is a hard pill to swallow, but often it's a problem because I'm choosing to make it a problem. And then I'm spending a lot of energy, whereas, and again, it's not about denying your feelings or denying the impact something's having on you, but when you zoom out, there are a lot of things that I could simply say, you know what, I'm going to make a choice, and I'm going to choose to start behaving in a way that I'm choosing to not let his problem have power over me.
Right.
I'm not going to let it be my problem.
So... I will share this. A lot of times we focus all our energy on the problem.
Right.
And not even, and by that I don't mean we instead focus on the solution, but instead focusing on the outcome or being healthy. And so when I was in my second cancer, liver cancer, about 4 months into it, I had all my test results come. My doctor kind of told me about it. My nurse kind of walked it through with me. But on chemo, your brain's so fuzzy.
Yeah.
I went home that night chewing on the fact that they said I had about a 10% chance of surviving.
Right.
Technically 11%. I waited till everyone went to sleep, walked across the street to my neighbor who's a nurse, with my test results. I wasn't even supposed to be out because it was dead of winter. I asked her, what does this mean? Did I hear this right? She looked at it. I'll never forget. We were right inside her front door. She sat down on the steps inside of her front door and was shaking her head. I said, this isn't good. And so she said, it means you have about 11% chance of surviving after all the chemo.
Yeah.
So I went to my doctor's office. Long story short, the very next day, I was like, I got to talk to him. I wasn't supposed to be there for another 4 days to get unplugged from my chemo. And the nurse is like, he's busy. He's not going to be able to see you. I said, I'll just stand here. He's got to leave the office at some point. And so he did. He literally, after about an hour, he came through the waiting area and walked to the door to leave to go somewhere. And I ran up to him, and I love my doctor. And I said, Dr. Gall, I showed him the test results from just the day before. I said, hey, what does this mean? And I'll never forget. And I'm going to cuss, and I apologize, but it'll make the point. He said, there are no percentages. There are two choices. You want to live or do you want to die?
Yeah.
And I said, I want to live. He said, well, then fuck the percentages and focus on living.
Wow.
And I was like,
okay.
Yeah. And so many times in relationship problems, I go back to that, you know,
that's good.
There's all these things that they're doing wrong and all these things. Well, do you want a healthy relationship? Do you want to be healthy or not?
Yeah.
I'm not in charge of them being healthy, but do I want to be healthy? Yes. Then focus on that and don't worry about all the energy you're spending on what that person is doing or not doing.
Yeah, that's so, Garth, that's so good and powerful. And it's so hard to get there when you're in emotional pain and you feel like it's been caused by someone else. But that is really, in so many times, that is the truth.
Yeah.
Make a choice and focus on you and what kind of life, what kind of existence do you want for you?
You know, ultimately, you might never get that person to see that it's their problem.
Often you won't ever get them to see.
And that's where, and I know it sounds super spiritual and almost glib, and I don't mean for it to, but that's where you got to, okay, then if good can come out of pain, if good can come out of trial, then God, bring all the good you can. Help me deal with this so that I become better.
Yeah.
There is a woman in a church I worked at in Rosemount, an incredibly godly woman. I mean, incredibly godly. And asking her how that happened, or, you know, what was the process she got to be there. And she said, I married an incredibly mean and evil man.
Wow.
And I had to learn that if God's grace is sufficient, if his strength can get me through this, then I need to rely on him. And she said it was the best Christian growth formula that you could ask for. So.
Yes. Yeah, it is not easy, but sometimes the best advice is stop focusing on someone or something else and focus on God. And being in a place where you are leaning in and you're choosing to make the right decision about your attitude, about your actions, because it's not about everyone else. It's about how do I want to be with God? What will glorify him? So.
Right. So we might have to end with this because this might be longer than.
Right. Well, that's okay.
But one of the questions that came into through our email was this: how do I get my husband to deal with his addiction to pornography in that he wants to deal with it on his own? He doesn't want to go to a counselor. He doesn't want to go to a pastor. He thinks that he can deal with it on his own. I know what I told her, and I'll share that with the audience. But in thinking through that, if someone comes into your office and says, you know, okay, it's his problem.
Sure.
He says he's going to deal with it on his own, and it's pornography. How do I get him to see that he can't?
Okay, so a lot depends on the personality type of the husband, because some personalities are much more open to actually at least hearing feedback. But here's what I would say at first glance. I would let them know, in general, you're not going to convince someone who's addicted. I don't care what the addiction is.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to convince them they need help. They have to come to that on their own. But it's so important to educate yourself on addiction and kind of on the trajectory, because thinking that I'm going to get through this addiction on my own is a huge classic sign of that trajectory and that pattern of addiction. And they kind of have to go through that phase,
right,
where they are well-intentioned, they may be very motivated, and they are convinced, or they're just really, you know, dug into that thing that they're gonna face this addiction and they're gonna do this on their own. They almost all have to go through that phase, and that, you know, by and large, the vast percentage of those people struggling with addiction can't do it on their own, but they have to almost prove that to themselves. And
right.
So for that spouse, I often say, you need to take care of you. You need to know this is a phase, a season, this is a part, a stage of addiction, and you need to just kind of be patient. Because to try to convince them that they're not going to, sometimes you can give them feedback and you can gently, when it's appropriate, say, you know, are you making progress? What are you able to say the progress? You know, you can ask them for some accountability, but by and large, you just got to wait it out because you're not going to convince them that they
right.
need help.
Right. You know, what I told her was he will never overcome this on his own.
Oh, I agree.
Specifically with pornography. You will never, there is a point where you have to completely own it. The men that I have found who've become free, truly free,
yes,
is like the alcoholic who at a party says, oh, no, thank you, I don't drink. You know, I'm a recovering alcoholic. No one goes, oh my goodness, they're recovering.
Right.
I have men who, in standing out in the open after church, someone will say, hey, you should work out, or hey, we should go to this coffee shop or whatever. And they'll openly say, you know, it's best if we just meet one-on-one here.
Yep.
Because I'm addicted to porn and my eyes have a tendency to wander.
Yeah.
And it's easier for me. And when a man says that, I'm like, high five. I mean,
yes,
that you would own that and
yes.
say,
yes.
I have another man who was in the IT world.
Yes.
And he became a carpenter.
Yeah.
And someone said, wow, what a huge switch.
Right.
And he said, well, I'm addicted to porn, and
yeah.
I'm overcoming that addiction. I can't be in IT without a computer.
Right.
And I know how much of a temptation that is. It'd be like being an alcoholic working at a bar. So I switched occupations. And he goes, and now I have a flip phone.
Yeah.
And my wife monitors everything, and I'm going to counseling, but I just won't put myself in that position.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard for a spouse to try, because in the early phases of when you're starting to feel the impact of a spouse's addiction, regardless of what it is, that's why it's so important that you get educated on addiction and the nuances of that particular addiction, because you need to kind of know what's likely to be the progression of this.
Yeah.
And also to know the progression of healing and sustaining your abstinence from whatever you're addicted to. And I think that the more you can look at that, so in this case, I would tell that wife, continue to ask God to help you to look with that husband with compassion, and then also get the help yourself for the deep wounds that his porn addiction is causing you as the spouse, because you definitely are impacted, hurt, and affected, but he is not ready to deal with his own addiction, so he's certainly not going to be ready to support and deal with the hurt it's causing you, but you as a wife are going to need that help. You're
right.
Going to need that support.
Yeah, I have two ladies that I train. They're both recovering addicts, and the one leads a very large 12-step group, and she had an interesting take on addiction when it comes to drugs, specifically alcohol. She said, no one takes that first drink and says, wow, this tastes great. She said, you just, you know, beer, wine, hard liquor, whatever it is, they're still at like, Everybody else is drinking it, and they say it's fun, and I've always wanted to try, so I will. So I overlook the taste, and so she goes, the problem is the addiction comes when you're no longer, the taste no longer bothers you. You're not drinking it because it tastes good. You might get a fruity berry flavor drink once in a while, but that's beyond the point. You're now drinking for what the drug does to your brain. In pornography, very much the same way.
Sure.
As a spouse who has someone who, if your husband's addicted to porn or vice versa, you look at the drink and say, wow, they're really attracted to that drink. They, It's all about that drink. No, it's really what that drink does to their brain.
Yes, yes.
It's an addiction. So understanding, if your spouse is at that point, help them understand that I get it. It's not because you're in love with that picture or that woman more than me.
Right.
It's because of what the drugs in your brain do. So that being said, you are not going to be able to deal with it on your own.
Yes.
There's a reason why 12-step groups were made and why they thrive.
That's right.
And so like any type of addiction, you can't just turn that off on your own. You need steps and help and people and accountability.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, if your spouse is open, if my husband was open to my input, I would tell him the facts and give that to him to consider. Now, when someone's caught in addiction, they often aren't open to any input or facts. They don't want to know about what you know to be true about how people get better. But if they are, then I think that's wise. You present them with the facts and you don't expect a response, but you just allow them to ponder that. You know, as far as addiction, any kind of addiction, the best book that just came out is called Dopamine Nation. It is an amazing book, and I think it's Anna Lemke that's the author, Dopamine Nation. It is so good, and I think it is one of the best things, especially for family members of people who are addicted to whatever the addiction is. Because she really goes she acknowledges the pain of that on the person who's addicted and on people in their life, but she goes into some wonderful, very understandable biological brain science of addiction and what's going on in their brain, which helps the family member go, okay, it's my husband isn't just trying to hurt me. It's like what you said, Garth. It's not that he's even so into the woman he's looking at who's in pornography. It has nothing to do with how much he loves me. It is so much about now what's going on in the brain. And she does Anna Lemke, Dopamine Nation.
Yep.
Can't recommend it.
The stronger. And the other thing with that is the book out years ago, Amusing Ourselves to Death.
Yes.
And the kind of the same thing, especially today more than ever.
Yes.
People are addicted to the high from social media, which is a form of pornography.
Yeah.
And again, feeding those chemicals, who you are, what you're doing, what you're about. Boy, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm definitely going to read that book. It looks great.
Which also is available on Audible and as well as hard copy. But letting people know, we will have on our website or on our Patreon channel a list of resources, and one section in there is resources for people who are struggling with pornography or sex addiction. So that's just a little FYI.
Right. The Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman came out in 2005, but is still such a classic more than ever.
Yeah, so wife whose husband, it's their problem. We don't want to minimize the pain it's causing you, but educate yourself so that you, when he's ready to hear or have feedback and get your input, you are talking from an educated place and get your help for yourself too.
Right. So with that, I'm gonna switch gears here for a second. So
how are we doing on time?
We're out of time.
Okay.
So,
that's what I thought.
So next time, we're going to talk about mindsets, which reminds me of something else. We'll pull up next time. Anyway, passing thoughts or closing thoughts.
Just for those who are listening, we have talked about addiction, and I just, of course, the Enneagram 2 and me, I just want to reemphasize, we in no way, shape, or form are trying to minimize or be dismissive of those of you who are experiencing great hurt and pain because of someone's addiction to something. So that's very tender place for both Garth and for me after walking it through with my sister and her addiction to alcohol. So we get it from a both personal and professional level. So I just want you to know we see you. And we want you to know it is a very painful thing to be in relationship with someone who's addicted.
Yeah. Again, love is a choice. And sometimes we hear that and we think of, okay, I have to love that person. But today, love is a choice. Love yourself.
Yeah.
Love yourself.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Great. All right, until next time, we'll see you.